introduction-wise, I am Peter Beauvais, former pastor of Northside Presbyterian Church here in Ann Arbor years ago. And I'm kind of going through a journey of how I got involved with Interfaith Council. I came from New York City. I served two parishes, one in the city itself, one on Long Island. And that involved a fair bit of preaching. I also wanted to be a doctor earlier in my life, and that didn't work out, and I was able to put together both fields of ministry and medicine, and was picking up with that interest after my second parish and came here to Michigan to begin a two-year hospital chaplaincy training program. And that was back in 76, 78. Got very interested in the psychodynamics, which was part of my training, but over the years began to feel a lack of spirituality, theology, Old and New Testament that related to my work. A lot of work with suffering people, of course. Worked then with a hospital in Detroit, Mount Carmel Mercy Hospital, for a couple of years, and got back involved with some of the racial issues that center held. With increasing disinterest in psychology, more in the issues of how did God and Jesus relate to civil rights at that point. So I took on Northside as part-time work with St. Aidan's, and there was an ecumenical aspect involved. It was very interesting. Dick Singleton, who was president of Interfaith Council at that point, invited me on board. And that began a journey with civil rights issues here in Ann Arbor. And then I met Barbara and Russ Fuller. Barbara had been to Vietnam with William Sloan Coffin, and that was part of my history as well in civil rights and in Vietnam. So I thought this is a perfect place to be with major issues that intrigued me. Then early, about mid-80s, there was a trip to Israel-Palestine, which I went on. Paul Dotson organized that from campus ministry here, but it got Interfaith Council folks interested in Israel-Palestine, and Betsy Barlow stepped up at that point to begin an initiative task force. So here we had civil rights, Vietnam, Israel-Palestine, and then the Central American War. I don't remember exactly the timing here, but that broke out, and that introduced us yet to other congregations in Central America who were devastated by the death squads and conflict with American policy, foreign policy as well. So Interfaith was inundated with five or six major focuses and interests. And the question was, did we know enough about all of these different matters that we could, as a preacher and as a leader of a congregation, could make enough sense to a common lay person — there are no common lay persons — but to make it interesting and engaging so that our faith in Jesus and in God and in the Spirit was intricately tied up with our thoughts about and personal interest in these various different arenas. Betsy Barlow brought Rebecca Kander into — she was part of that mix with Israel and Palestine. These were all pretty emotional issues. And the Interfaith Council was interfaith. So we were engaging many other congregations, Black, white, Jewish, Protestant, Catholic. So it was an ideal, but small enough with with folks in it that we got to know one another. Marianne Perrone was very involved with Central America. She still is. This is a further introduction to that arena for me. And it helped me to couple not only what people were going through personally and their suffering in the hospitals that I worked with, but the suffering groups of people in Palestine, in Central America, in Vietnam, and how to try to make some sense of a faithful witness for Christ in all of those matters. Interfaith was also involved with the crop walks. Northside was a stop-off place on that for several years. So I got interested in food policy. That got me to agribusiness. That got us into what are our farmers doing? What's happening with the land in the country that's being inundated with chemicals, chemical farming? And that led us into the environmental issues about global warming. All of that led us into what about economics? What about the capitalist system? Capitalist that's taking part and parcel in using these resources and turning them into stuff, but had a dark side behind it, which led to CO2 into the atmosphere, which led to the warming of the planet. So I guess my voice should say something about exhaustion as one issue after another kind of got on our plate. And then in the late 80s, we had a man in our congregation come out as a gay man, and Northside became one of the first Presbyterian churches in the Detroit area to become a more light church to pick up on the concerns for fairness and justice and genuine acceptance of people of different sexual persuasions into the congregation and for the culture. So interfaith was very important. And it was a way of having these kinds of conversations and action steps with others from very different traditions. That was very interesting and exciting for me. Time-consuming. Some of the important action was the conversations in the different task forces. And there was always a core of people with each task force that would kind of take the initiatives on that and pull together. I mean, there were very instrumental people. Marianne Perron was one. Betsy Barlow was another. Dick Singleton. The integration effort, I don't mean civil rights, I mean the integrating environment, economics, militarism, interfaith dialogue. And for me, as a preacher and a pastor of a Presbyterian church, I felt it was my job to help the congregation do some integration here. But along the way, I was stumbling upon yet one more dilemma that needed to be integrated into all of this. So the daunting work continued to be my trying to help myself and a congregation figure out what the Spirit of the Living Christ would say and do in regards to these variety of issues with different faiths, traditions, when a lot of what was very basic to how does the faith address a culture that is in some ways very different? It's a culture that lives without that sense of God's presence and action, although it might speak as though the Christian far right would have the patriotic answer for what the country needed to move in. One aha moment for me was William Sloan Coffin. Coffin was the pastor of Riverside Church, an amazing witness, public figure in civil rights, Vietnam, gay, lesbian. So he was, in a way, a mentor. When apartheid came on the scene, I haven't mentioned that up to now, but Bishop Tutu, Mandela, these folks were speaking, crying loudly from a Christ-centered perspective about a very desperate situation in South Africa. And that was just in the news, and the question was, well, what does one preach about Sunday with all these things around, with a small congregation, relatively small congregation, so that we as individuals could somehow get a deeper sense of Christ's involvement with our personal lives, our congregational life, and yet the American scene and the larger world scene. And it was just weaving together of Old and New Testament stories to find the wisdom that would give some kind of hint about God's huge, long story through Old and New Testament about what he was hoping for and urging us toward. Coffin was a chaplain at Yale for years, then became the pastor of Riverside, big church in New York City, huge church. And it was a pulpit from which he perhaps had, for me, one of the most lively and interesting understandings of Jesus that I had come upon. And he was integrating that with civil rights struggle, with Martin Luther King, with the Israeli-Palestinian issue. They were getting into the environmental issue at that point. So he, as a brother in the faith who was talking imaginatively and biblically about these matters, very important to me. And another one is, but this is more recent, this is not during my time then. ICPGA was an action-oriented, and that was very important, but also in the middle of that was, how are we making friendships with one another? Were we touching the lives of blacks in Ann Arbor? Were we involved somehow in the hunger issue in Ann Arbor itself, which led to that task force evolving? So it was always pushing at action steps as well as making and deepening the friendships, and especially with those who suffered under these circumstances. What did they have to teach us? What did the basic communities have to tell us about suffering? What did the African Americans have to tell us about? How would they become our teachers? And then, of course, we'd come back in conversation with Jewish congregations and with a Presbyterian congregation who didn't have a whole lot of appreciation for some of the really dramatic struggles of the Palestinians and the Israelis. And over the years, these issues, one would have hoped to be addressed and being settled, have just simply gotten worse. And to switch into crop walk, the crop walk is talking about food, and that gets into the whole question of organic farming versus agribusiness. And agribusiness at this point for the planet has got the food system tied up with chemicals. And we're finding that that has a huge dark side, which is undermining green growth of any number of kinds. And if you're going to try to feed 9 billion people with that system, it isn't going to work. So we're headed toward a further warming planet. And we get to talking about this in terms of Holocaust. One of my theologian's friends, Larry Rasmussen, was an expert on Nazi Germany Holocaust. But he was also an expert on environmental. He said, well, one in Germany was the fast Holocaust. We're living in the slow Holocaust. We're living at a time in which you put a frog in a kettle of water and start warming it up. The frog will not jump out. It'll stay in there and die. Well, he would say that's kind of the direction of our food capitalist system. organizations like ICPJ that tackle 5 or 6 or 7 very important issues in terms of analysis and what can we do about these things, need to also be asking in the middle of that, what are we called to, who are we called to be with and to learn from? And as much attention to the action step, it's to the step of getting close to the people for whom these matters affect them, their life pretty deeply. So racial, economic, I mean, look at our jail system. It's a hopeless condition. Well, how many of us know any prisoners by name and are not only dealing with the issue of incarceration and what that means, but what happens to Emily as a mother who's been in the system, and have we become her friend and she ours? And that's kind of become more and more important over the years is food, okay. Do you know farmers by name? Do you know the kind of what they're under with pressure with agribusiness? If you talk to the folks who are trying to change their practices to organic farming and how difficult that is? And now, where's the place of the faith congregations? Are not they simply marching and handing money in, but are they actually got hands-on relationship forming with these people? And that's probably the tougher, deeper matter in all of these, because we are a very busy culture. And of course, that's part of distraction. That's part of our dilemma about our culture. It's a culture filled with remarkable distractions. And so it always keeps prompting the question, well, if God is inviting us to a deeper and more profound life with him, in his presence, with the stranger, which are his, how can we shift our living on the surface with distractions to living deeper in with people, with strangers whom we probably wouldn't ordinarily ever talk to, shake hands with, meet? But that's part of the outcome of what's come with all of my work with ICPJ is these are what is critical about all of this is you not have just your facts and your information straight, but have you got some buddies, growing buddies behind bars, working on the farms, dealing with economic matters? I mean, I think these struggles that we've talked about are exactly the places that invite us, force us to clarify who are we, of people of faith in particular, as we address very dark issues. That gets a rise to Israel in exile. Israel in exile discovered a whole new understanding of themselves that, lo and behold, God was in Babylon and said to them, make your home here. Their welfare is your welfare. And they had to just expand their understanding of God at that point because they thought that they were the chosen people. How could they be in bondage? And of course, they were in exile several times, Assyria, Babylon, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, everybody had a kind of, and Jesus came along and said, well, what is God saying to you in terms of the life and hope and overwhelming love and generosity he has for you that you then rediscover in these struggles? I mean, that's where the cross of Jesus becomes most critical. It's there on the cross. Apparently, you see in the most blatant form, God's utter care for us, willingness to go into and all through that, which then brings us back to look at these very dark, difficult issues with some sense that God's eternal presence will always be around us, will always be under us, will always be the everlasting arms. And that can help us divest our commitments to policies, destructive policies, because you begin to realize that God's love is more powerful than weapons, than atomic bombs, than financial prowess. So it helps us, I think it can help us return to a keen, probing analysis of what's wrong, but also with a word of hope. But I think we find that in the victims most clearly. And I think if we pay attention to the marginalized, to the poor, to the earth, that it will tell us a lot that we may not want to hear, but that is actually reminders of hope and life in awful circumstances.